Good afternoon. You're listening to the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program Public Affairs Show on KDNK. My name is Steve Mills. I am the co-leader and co-founder of Gay for Good Rocky Mountains here in the Roaring Fork Valley. I'm also joined by Hallie Zander, project coordinator for the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program. Today, we're very excited to continue our monthly program, Dimensions in Diversity, geared towards LGBTQ plus youth here in our valley. Every month, we'll bring in local, state, or national nonprofits to speak about resources for youth and their families. We'll also highlight successes, challenges, and stigmas facing queer youth today. In-kind support for this program comes from Gay for Good Rocky Mountains. Today, we're very excited to be joined by Jocelyn Carreno, who is a student at Aspen High School.
In late March, I spoke with Jocelyn about her presentation to the Aspen High School faculty. She recently educated the entire staff about how to address microaggressions in the classroom, specifically regarding racial slurs and other hurtful comments. While we spoke, she disclosed to me and our audiences that she belongs to the LGBTQ plus community, and I've invited her back to be our guest this month on Dimensions in Diversity. We are excited to have her on our program.
My name's Jocelyn Carreno. I go by Joss. I'm currently a senior at Aspen High School. Some of the things I like to do, I play soccer. This is my fourth year. We're hoping to go to states this year, and I love my family very much. So most of my time is spent with them and raising my little nieces. So, yeah.
Jess, can you share with us your pronouns and how you identify?
I go by she, her pronouns. Thank you for asking.
Wonderful. And I'm sorry, I missed what sport it was that you're going to state for?
Soccer. We're hoping to go to states this year. Okay. So, yeah.
Cool. How's the season been so far?
We're actually starting really late this year just because of COVID. Things are a little odd. So typically we would have started our season in March. We're going into April and our season technically starts at the end of this month, which is really odd, and we've never gone this late.
Well, Jess, I interviewed you earlier this week about a presentation you gave to the staff. It's now been a little over a week. Has there been any more feedback that you've gotten from the presentation on microaggressions and racism in the classroom?
Not that I am aware of, but I'm hoping that once I come back to school and, you know, some of my teachers have listened to it, I'll get some more feedback and I can work with them to see how they can improve as teachers and as people, and myself too. It's a learning experience for all of us. So I'm hoping we'll get some progress soon.
Yeah.
What opportunities do you seek? I mean, I was very fascinated to hear about that project, and kudos to you for even taking that on. Like, it just made my head spin when Hallie mentioned that. I was like, when I was your age, there's no way I would have had the confidence to take on a project like that. Where do you see an opportunity with doing something similar with, like, the, you know, issues facing the LGBTQ plus community?
Similar to race and et cetera, the LGBT community in our school, it's another issue, where I feel that not a lot of people have a voice. And while we do have a GSA and whatever it may be, and, you know, the transgender flag, the gay flag, whatever, a lot of the students still feel a little ostracized or outcasted. And that just has to do with the community that we have in our school and sort of the standards that are in place. Regardless of what Aspen does with the, you know, Gay Ski Week or whatever it may be, there's still a fight for equality with sexuality and with race in our schools. So I'm hoping that by opening another conversation, there's more open-mindedness, because a lot of our teachers did live in a different, you know, society where the ability to even be like think that you could transition into a man or whatever it may be wasn't a possibility. So this is new to them. It's new to a lot of the students as well. So hopefully a new conversation is opened.
That's a very valid point, because, you know, some of the younger generation, they've seen, you know, family and friends come out. They've seen, you know, same-sex marriage become legal in the States. So for the younger generation, it's a very general statement. It's not a big deal. You know, I'll kind of say it that way. And that's very general, you know, kind of stereotyping the broader group. But the older generation, where it wasn't okay to be gay or okay to be trans, or there were no policies or even laws to support LGBTQ youth or adults, you know, some of the older generation are still trying to figure it all out. So I know with myself being a gay man, I've had to have a little bit more compassion for those that maybe haven't been exposed to somebody in the LGBT plus community, or they, you know, don't know anybody. And it's all about education, yes, and getting people to know what some of the struggles are. And it seems like you've already tackled a lot of that from the race perspective and doing some education there. So obviously, and to your point, there's plenty of work to do with the LGBTQ plus group as well.
Yeah, there's a different conversation with race, just because, you know, our teachers are aware that that's been an issue, and it's a more blatant issue. It's more obvious to the public, I feel, you know, and their parents talk to them about, you know, civil rights movement. We talk about it in history. And then when the LGBT community does come up in a history class, for example, there's less information about it. It's not talked about in depth. And a lot of students make sly comments or whatever it may be, whether that be because of the environment that they are in at home or just school environment. So it's definitely an interesting conversation to have. I personally didn't grow up knowing anything about the LGBT community. And we're teaching my nieces, listen, this is RuPaul's Drag Race.
it's always a great place to start.
Yeah.
oh my God, fantastic.
Yeah, or they'll be like, because my brother's also gay, so, you know, that definitely was awesome for me to be like, oh, well, that's okay, you know. And we teach them that this is a reality, that I am lesbian and their uncle is gay, and that there are some people that don't respect us. You know, kids are so easy. They adapt so easily and they understand it completely. And then there's my teachers who are a little less willing to talk about it, just because they may not understand it and don't want to be offensive. And there's always this, when topics like this do come up, it's always that they may not understand and don't know where to educate themselves or where to start. There's some hesitance, but the newer generations, like you said, are definitely more open to having these conversations. Just seeing the freshmen this year compared to my grade, they're way more open about the way they express themselves. They'll dye their hair, they'll do whatever it may be. And whether they be they, them, she, her, whatever, they're so open about their pronouns, the way they express themselves. And then you just look at my grade class, and there's the people who may do that are definitely outcasted. And it's such a big difference. And that's just only 4 years apart. So it's weird to see.
Going back to what you're saying about educating your nieces and nephews, I think that's huge. We all know that, you know, we're all born a blank slate and we're taught hate, we're taught intolerance. That's not ingrained in any of us. So the earlier you can educate kids that being LGBT is just part of the fabric of our country, it just makes us all greater as being a great, diverse country. It's not a big deal. It's just like any other thing. So I think you're making some major headway by doing that with your nieces and nephews. So I thank you for doing that, because they need, you know, kids need positive role models to look up to. And it seems like, you know, you and your brother are doing that.
Yeah, it's really funny, actually. The other day we took them to Target and they're like, can you play Sissy That Walk?
From RuPaul's Drag Race. Yeah.
We're watching season 13 currently. It's always been a thing in our family. We watch RuPaul's Drag Race together. And they're like, is your blood level like sugar low? And they'll start saying the catchphrases, and it's hilarious because to them it's just like people. They're just people.
Yeah.
And that's how it should be, you know.
You know, before this interview, we asked you if there was anything that was off limits, and you said you were an open book, that you are like pretty outspoken. Is there an example of someone like that in your family that you kind of looked up to, that you got that from, or is it something just deep within inside you?
I feel like I'm a combination of all three of my older siblings. They sort of raised me. My mom was a single parent, so a lot of taking care of me came from my siblings. And the outspokenness is mainly from my older sister and from my older brother, Anthony. He taught me at a young age. He was like, listen, this is RuPaul's Drag Race. And so then it started from there and it transferred to my nieces.
All roads lead back to RuPaul's Drag Race.
Exactly. and it was just, he was my role model in the fact that it was okay for me to express who I was, whether it was my sexuality or whatever it may be. And my sister was sort of the person was like, if you want a piercing, we can go get a piercing, but you're going to regret it. If it's going to be your choice, you know? And so she gave me that choice of being able to express my person. And it's hilarious because when people ask, why do you have so many piercings? Oh, you have tattoos, whatever it may be. Like, well, my sister let me choose how I wanted to express myself. And this is how I express myself. And a lot of that confidence and who I am came from them because they gave me a choice and they let me be who I was. So,
can I ask you a little bit about when you decided to come out and what that process was like?
I was about 13 years old when I decided to come out. At first, I thought I was bisexual because I was sort of just figuring things out. I was 13 and my brother was very open about who he was, you know, so it definitely was an easier conversation. One day I went out shopping with my mom. We were talking about sexuality and she was like, I love you guys regardless of who you love. And I was like, Mom, I think I like girls. And that was it. And I came home with a girlfriend like a couple months later, so that was the conversation. It was, I had an easier coming out story than most, which is nice because my mom used to be a little more closed-minded, but everyone's been supportive of me since then. So
when you said your mom used to be, you know, more closed-minded, what do you think got her to a point of being more accepting of you and your brother?
She immigrated from Honduras to the United States. And she grew up in a very religious household where homosexuality just wasn't okay. But I think it was sort of us that educated her in a way. And, you know, at first she was very confused about it, but she came to a point where she was like, well, I love you guys anyways. You're my kids. You're all I have. You are my kids. And, you know, she started watching our shows together and things like that. It's just this idea that she was with us in an environment where we were open to other things. And so she became open to other things.
It's not like you love educating others because you're educating staff at Aspen High School about, you know, microaggressions with race, which is like, still blows my mind. And you're, you know, educating your, you know, your family on LGBTQ plus issues. That's so brave of you to take on that educator role because not a lot of people are comfortable in that type of role.
I mean, I wasn't at first, don't get me wrong, but I feel like it's just, it needs to happen, whether it be at home or whether it be with my friends or the staff at my school. And the fact that I am a minority and I am part of the LGBT community, that gives me power, and that gives me a power to educate. And that's how it should be seen. I have a power to educate because I am part of these communities. I gave myself a voice because it needed to be done.
And, you know, it's so funny. You started talking about how, you know, you first came out as bi when you were 13 and you were like still figuring yourself out. And I'm thinking, oh, I'm 28 and I'm still figuring myself out. It always is this like really reassuring thing when on this show, when we talk to high schoolers, because your stories are full of empowerment, and it's of course like a struggle and, you know, trying to understand yourself better and to seek acceptance in your community, but also you're met with just a very different world than we were, even just 10 years ago for me, and a little bit more than that for Steve. But your words today so far are enlightening and energizing for me, for sure.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Dimensions in Diversity on the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program. This program is supported by Gay for Good Rocky Mountains.
Growing in Aspen in general for me was a struggle, because sometimes Aspen deems itself to be a very liberal town. And I feel like sometimes it's more of a front than a reality, because while we do have, you know, Aspen Gay Ski Week or whatever it may be, when it comes to the community itself, these conversations aren't being had. And so for me, growing up, one, being a person of color, and two, being trying to find myself as a member of the LGBT community, it was very hard to accept myself, because the environment that I was fostered in was very, they didn't talk about these issues. A lot of the parents now still don't talk to their students about race because they think it may not apply to them. But it does. It applies to everyone in the same way that the LGBT community needs to be spoken about to kids, because it applies to everyone, regardless of the fact that they may not think it is. So I've always liked girls, now that I think about it. But it was something where kids in my grade were like saying slurs. And it was like, well, I don't know if I'm comfortable saying that I'm me like girls, because these students around me don't seem to accept those things. Certain parents will be like, you know, it was very difficult coming to terms with things for a long time, even after I had expressed myself to my mom, because I found that when I did tell people that I liked girls, some of the people shied away from me, just because they felt uncomfortable. They're taught that this isn't okay. That's the only way that they can react, because they don't know any better. And I didn't know any better. The environment I grew up in was a hostile environment, and it wasn't very open to people who weren't straight, people who weren't white. Our teachers made sly comments about gender all the time, like, ooh, let me get those strong males to come pick up the chairs with me. Well, I'm a strong female. I can go pick up those chairs. That was always a little bit angering, and I didn't understand why then. They definitely push certain roles onto us, whether we know it or not. I sort of foster that anger into, I need to educate you because clearly you're not understanding what I'm understanding. There's still more work to do.
When kind of going back to what you're originally saying about, and I know you're talking about Aspen in general, but I also think you're talking about the world in general, is that, you know, if people don't feel like a certain cause applies to them, they just don't participate. Mm-hmm. But in multiple times we've mentioned, or we've talked on this show, that, you know, the civil rights movement wouldn't have progressed as quickly and obviously there's still tons of work to do, but wouldn't it have progressed so quickly if more Caucasian people didn't help the cause? Same thing with the LGBT community. If more straight people didn't get involved, we wouldn't be where we are now. So we do need allies to support minorities to further the cause. So even if it doesn't, you don't feel like it applies to you because you don't fit into that demographic, minority groups still need help and they still need allies to help, you know, move their causes forward. So I'm glad you touched on that because I think a lot of people, they say they're, you know, they want to support whatever cause, but they kind of sit on the sideline and they don't put action, you put the action behind those words. And I think that's a huge opportunity. It's easy to say you're an ally. It's easy to say you're okay with something, but that's just scratching the surface. Like, but what are you going to do with that? How are you going to move it forward? And it sounds like you are roping people into that, which we need to rope more people into it for whatever minority group that's being ostracized. We need the other groups to help move those initiatives forward.
We talk a lot about like the trend of younger people being like younger generations coming farther and being more understanding. And although as a teacher, you know, I've found that I think, and maybe this has to do with the communities that I'm in, I don't necessarily hear like the F word very often, but what I do hear often as like a slur, I don't know if I would call it a slur because it's the actual word we use, but when people refer to something that they think is uncool as like, oh, that's so gay, that's something I hear much more often in youth groups as opposed to in adult groups. I just wonder if you've noticed the same trend or what kinds of negative things you're hearing at your school right now.
Those are very common microaggressions that I hear all the time. I'll be walking up to the high school and I'll hear these middle schoolers be like, bro, that's so gay. Or another one is like, no homo, bro. Like, I love you, but no homo. I don't hear the F slur as much, but I definitely did hear it growing up with the students in my class. They love to say that word. Maybe their parents are like, you can't, you know, we accept all people, just don't be gay, you know? And it's like, there's that, like, again, there's that front where it's like, we pretend to be accepting, but we really don't understand you and we really don't want to be you. That's a bigger issue with society where they think that men can't love each other as just strictly friends, which is weird because women, I can give you a hug and be like, I love you so much and give you a kiss on the cheek and sit in your lap and whatever it may be. That has to do with the bigger role that men play in society and how they portray themselves. And so,
toxic masculinity is a big
exactly.
Steve, maybe you want to kind of touch on that a little bit if you have any personal perspective to share as a man about toxic masculinity in this valley.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a machismo type of air about some people that you have to do this, you have to say this, you have to look this way, you have to act this way, you have to fit all these boxes. And if you're anywhere not in those boxes, then you're different. And different's great. And no one knows what normal is. There's no definition of normal. Society puts norms out there, but there is no normal. And I think people try so hard to fit into boxes that don't identify with who their true self is. And it's so detrimental to their mental health, their physical health, their emotional health. And I just think it's just not necessary. And I think a lot of our youth nowadays they're grabbing onto that and they're pushing against these norms that they don't really build you up. And if anything else, they tear you down. So I'm glad to see that the youth kind of fight against that.
Something that I think I've really valued in my adult life has been finding queer community and like really being connected to other queer people that are in Carbondale here or in the whole valley. And that's something that brings me so much joy and meaning in my life. And I wonder if that's something you've been able to find in the high school environment or like through a GSA, anything like that?
I do have a couple of my friends who definitely struggled to get there, but they were like my little community there. I feel like there's not a big open community in our school yet, just because of that underlying fear. But I feel that hopefully they'll start to come out a little more once the conversation shifts. My community sort of intermingles with my brother's community because they sort of also helped raise me. And so they're like my mentors and et cetera. But I'm hoping that'll change because I feel like there is a bigger community at my school. It's just they're not open to it yet.
Joss, is there anything you'd like to add just about what we've talked about today? What you hope will change in the future at your school or in Aspen?
Just sort of like my last conversation with you, accept that maybe you have your biases and move forward. Life is short. If you can accept those mistakes, be who you are. That's it. The world will change, whether some people like it or not. And it'll be more accepting. And for those who don't feel comfortable talking about it, that's what I'm here for. So.
You've been listening to Dimensions and Diversity on the Andy Zinka Youth Empowerment Program. This program is supported by Gate for Good Rocky Mountains. We've been talking with Joss Carreno, a student at Aspen High School. If you'd like more information about Gate for Good and their upcoming events, visit gateforgood.org/Rocky Mountains. Thanks for listening to Dimensions and Diversity on the Andy Zinka Youth Empowerment Program.